The Story of Moses, Part 1. Nearly 300 years have passed since the time of Joseph and the Great Famine. Dark times have fallen on Egypt. Jacob's race, the Israelites, have become slaves to the Egyptians. Despite this, they still cling to life and even increase in numbers. The new Pharaoh orders a final solution to the Israelite problem. All newborn baby boys are to be drowned at birth in the River Nile. This is a story of a man called Moses and of how he led his people to freedom. Born at the time of the persecution, the baby Moses was kept undetected for 3 months. His mother knew it was only a matter of time before he was discovered. In the end, she took him to the Nile herself, but not to be drowned. Placing him in a basket, waterproof with tar, she pushed him out into the reeds. It happened that one of the Pharaoh's daughters had gone down to the river to bathe. It was towards her that the little basket gently floated, taking with it the baby inside. The Pharaoh's daughter heard the baby crying. She had no idea where the baby had come from, but watching from close by to make sure the baby was safe was an older sister of Moses. Pharaoh's daughter decided to make the child her own. And so, the abandoned child of an oppressed slave was taken out of danger and into the very heart of Pharaoh's palace. Moses grew up in the Pharaoh's palace, safe from harm in the house of the very man who wanted to exterminate his race. If he'd had any idea of the trouble Moses would cause Egypt later, the Pharaoh would probably have killed him with his own hands, there and then. Young Moses lived a privileged life in the royal household, while all around him, his fellow Israelites, suffered at the hands of their masters. He watched as he grew, waiting for the chance to strike back. One day, he saw an Egyptian savagely beating an Israelite, and something inside him snapped. "He's had enough of that! Please, no more! Didn't you hear me?" said Moses. "I said, stop." The Egyptian said, "Who do you think you are? He's my slave, and anyway, he's only an Israelite." Moses looked round. He had to make sure there were no witnesses before calling to the man, and thinking no one was looking, he struck the man dead. It was only afterwards that Moses realised what he had done. Quickly, he buried the body in the desert sand, thinking his crime would go undetected, and he returned to the city. The next day he saw two Israelites arguing. "Look, you owe me 3 loaves, said one. "And I've said you have to wait for them unless you want broken legs as well, said the other. "Don't you threaten me," Moses intervened. "Why are you fighting each other when it's the Egyptians who are the real problem? Why don't you take it out on them?" The two men stopped brawling and looked at Moses. "And what are you going to do to stop us?" said one of them to Moses. "Kill us like you did that slave driver yesterday? Bury us in the sand?" Horror of horrors, the crime that he thought so secret, so well hidden, was common knowledge. Even men brawling in the streets knew about it. Terrified, Moses ran for his life. He roamed far into the desert where the Midianite people lived, themselves descendants of Abraham. One day, as he sat by a well, the daughters of Jethro, the Midianite priest, came to draw water. As Moses watched, some shepherds arrived and began to harass the woman. Moses' sense of injustice had already caused him to kill one man, now it got him involved in yet another dispute. "Why don't you just leave them alone?" "Why? What will you give me if I do?" said the shepherd. Moses squared up to the shepherd. "Didn't you hear me? I said leave them alone." "Oh, we were only having a bit of fun." "I don't care," said Moses angrily. The woman went back to their father and told him of the stranger who had come to their rescue as if from nowhere. Life was often hard for the desert dwellers, so a kindness rarely went unrewarded. Moses was taken to Jethro, the priest, and became part of his family, marrying one of his daughters. So Moses lived the life of a shepherd, tending Jethro's herds. The old life of luxury and privilege in the palace behind him, Moses acquired new skills. He learned how to survive in the wilderness, things he could never have known about in the comfort and safety of the palace. All the while, the Israelites remained in slavery. Their cries for help went up to God, who had not forgotten the promises made to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. It was time for God to act in more direct ways, which came as a great surprise to the last man ever to expect a personal call from God, Moses. He was tending the sheep on the slopes of Mount Sinai when he saw a bush on fire. As he went to have a closer look, he saw that although the branches flamed, the bush itself was completely unharmed. It was then that a voice spoke to him. "Moses, who's there?" Moses was terrified. "I am the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Take off your shoes, for you are standing on holy ground. I have seen the misery of my people in Egypt, and I have come to rescue them, to take them to a land overflowing with milk and honey. I want you to go to the Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt." "Me?" said Moses. "Who believe me? I'm not even a good speaker." "Who makes men speak? Who makes them see and hear? I do. You have a brother, Aaron. He can speak for you. I will help you both." "Oh, please, oh, no, please, please, send someone else." "Go and gather the leaders of Israel together. Tell them that their God has sent you to lead them. They will believe you. Then go to the Pharaoh, and I will make him let my people go." "Oh, but how will they believe me? Pick someone else." "You are holding a staff, Moses. Throw it to the ground and then watch." Moses did as the voice of God said, and the staff turned into a snake, much to his surprise. "Now, Moses, pick it up by the tail." And Moses picked up the snake, and it was a staff again. "Show them this, and they will believe you. Now go, bring my people out of Egypt." And so Moses went. Taking his wife and sons, he left Jethro and the life of a shepherd and returned to Egypt. The leaders of the Israelites were more than willing to listen to Moses, especially since his brother Aaron did most of the talking. The plan was simple. The Israelites would ask for 3 days' release from work to go to the desert and worship their God. Once assembled, they would make a break for freedom. However, convincing Pharaoh was another matter altogether. Aaron stood in front of the Pharaoh with Moses by his side. "My brother and I speak for the entire Israelite people. We ask permission to cross the border for 3 days to worship our God in the desert." "3 days, is that all?" said Pharaoh. "I don't think you're working hard enough as it is, and now you want 3 days' holiday? Is this what you're telling me, you poor things? I think you're just lazy. Have the overseers increase the workload of all Israelites." The Israelites were being worked half to death as it was. Despite this, the Pharaoh's orders were enforced brutally. The Israelite foremen soon came to resent Moses' interference. Pharaoh now had even more reason to hate them. The more they begged for mercy, the harder Pharaoh worked them. So Moses went out into the wilderness once more and prayed, "Lord God, why have you caused so much trouble for us? Since I went to see Pharaoh, things have only got worse." A voice came back to him. "I am the Lord who spoke to Abraham, to Isaac, and Jacob. I made a promise to them, and I have not forgotten it. Go back to the Pharaoh and tell him to release my people. but he won't listen to me. Take Aaron, your brother. He will speak for you and Pharaoh will listen. I will punish the Egyptians for what they have done. They will release you. And so Moses and Aaron once again went to see the Pharaoh. He would tell him straight, release the Israelites, or unimaginable plagues and disasters would ravage his country. God's plans had to be fulfilled. But the Pharaoh just laughed. Moses, Aaron, you amuse me. I have magicians who can do all the things you describe. I'm not afraid of you and your conjuring tricks. Come, Aaron. We've warned him. We can do no more. And so it started. 10 plagues in all came on Egypt, each worse than the last. First was the plague of blood. The River Nile, lifeline of the Egyptian people, turned to blood. Then a plague of frogs driven from the filthy waters and the rotting fish. They invaded the streets and the houses where they died, adding to the stench. Then a plague of gnats and a plague of flies, feeding on the rotting fish and frogs. But still, Pharaoh refused to let the Israelites go. Then came a plague on the livestock, followed by a plague of boils and skin infections on the people. A plague of hailstones fell, destroying crops the length of the country. Then a plague of locusts, finishing off what the hailstones had left. Still, Pharaoh refused to let the Israelites go. Then came a plague of darkness. 9 plagues had fallen so far, but one was still to come, and it would be the worst. Moses said to his leaders, Pharaoh has been given one final chance, but he has refused. He told me to get out of his sight, and I intend to do just that. One more plague will come, and then he will release us. But we must be prepared. Tonight is a special night, he went on. From now on, we will mark this as the first day in our calendar. It's so important. Every Israelite family must take their best lamb and slaughter it. If they're too poor, then share with their neighbour. They must take some blood and make a mark on their door frames. They must roast the lamb and eat it with bread made without yeast. It's vital we do this tonight and throughout all generations to come. Something dreadful is going to happen to Egypt, but those of us who follow these instructions will be left unharmed. At midnight, God struck Egypt. The eldest child of every Egyptian, from the Pharaoh on his throne to the lowest prisoner in his dungeon, died. This was the plague of the firstborn and the worst of all. Wailing and crying filled the streets, but death passed over the Israelites. At last, Pharaoh let them go. The Egyptian people were so keen to see the back of the Israelites that they even gave them gold and silver, food and livestock. As they set off, Moses said to his brother, Aaron, tell the people to remember this day. Every year on this day we will eat bread without yeast to remind us that our God rescued us. It will be a sign as plain as if we'd tied a note to our foreheads or wrists. The firstborn of all Israel, even the livestock, now belong to God. We are all under his protection. All Israel left Egypt. Even Joseph's bones were carried with him. At long last, he could be brought home for burial. The long journey home had begun. Back in Egypt, the nation slowly recovered from the ravages of the plagues, giving some people time to think clearly again. The Pharaoh's servants muttered to one another, he's been like this for days. He's never been so quiet. Oh no, it won't last. Pharaoh thought to himself, after all the trouble they caused, I simply let them go. Have I lost my mind? He stood up. Guards, summon the charioteers. Call the fastest men in the land. I want the Israelites brought back. I want them back. The Israelites, meanwhile, had camped and rested, Hemmed in by mountains on one side and the Red Sea on the other, they were an easy target for the Egyptian soldiers. These were footsore slaves, still aching from forced labour. Although armed, they'd be no match for Pharaoh's elite charioteers. A lookout said, "Quick, quick, the Egyptians are coming. Call the guards. Someone tell Moses and Aaron. Moses, Moses, come quickly." Moses' shoulders slumped. "So, the Egyptians have come after us at last." Aaron said, "Moses, what's wrong with you? We were better off under Pharaoh. He would have killed us there and then, not dragged us out into the desert to die." Moses gathered the leaders of the Israelites. "Tell the people not to be afraid. God is with us." "But Moses, the Egyptians..." "The Egyptians will never be seen again." As the Egyptians approached the Israelites' camp, the two sides were hidden from each other by a cloud. In an otherwise empty desert, Pharaoh's finest troops failed to locate an entire nation camped right in front of their eyes. But the Israelites were still trapped, the Egyptians behind them and the sea in front. Then God spoke to Moses. "Why do people cry out to me? Raise your staff and you will cross the sea on dry land." So Moses raised his staff over the sea, as God said, and as he did so, a strong wind came in from the east. Moses stood there all night, his staff over the sea, and in the morning, the waters had parted. And so the whole nation of the Israelites passed unharmed across the sea. Every man, woman, and child, their flocks and their herds and what possessions they could carry, all passed safely across the sea. They got to the other side and cheered. Moses shouts, "Who is like you, my God? The nations will hear of this and our enemies will melt before us. Your unfailing love will lead us and you will reign forever." The Egyptian charioteers arrived at the edge of the sea, saw that there was a path of waters that had parted. "After them, after them, follow them across." After all, if an army of slaves could cross the Red Sea unharmed, why shouldn't they? In their chariots, they'd be across in no time at all. "Onward, onward, draw your swords and charge them. We've got them now." The chariots were halfway across when the water started to rise slowly at first, but soon enough began to slow their wheels. "What?" the chariot. "Oh, what? Oh, no, not now, no. Oh," chaos ensued. "Turn back, turn back. The water is rising. Turn back." And as the waters returned to the sea, the Israelites on the far shore shouted, "Look, the waters have swallowed the whole army. They wanted us dead. Now they've gone. Only God could have saved them." But not one of them survived. Moses stood on the far shore. "Who indeed is like you, Lord God? In your unfailing love, you will lead your people and protect us." Then Moses and Aaron's sister, the prophetess Miriam, took up her tambourine, and all the women of Israel followed her, rejoicing. And as they danced, they sang, "Sing to the Lord, for he has given a great victory. The horses and riders he has thrown into the sea."